Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Critically acclaimed New York Times bestselling author Gary Steingart wins over readers with humor, satirical takedowns of contemporary society, and a compassionate examination of modern love and loss. He's the author of the novels The Russian Debutante's Handbook, Absurdistan, and Super Sad True Love Story, and most recently, the memoir Little Failure. Steingart will speak at Vassar College on Thursday, March 27th at 8 o'clock in Poughkeepsie in the Students' Building Second Floor Auditorium. The event is the college's annual Alex Krieger 95 Memorial Lecture, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Gary Steingart to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Sure. Great to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. Of course, it's been a busy time for you. Little Failure, your memoir comes out. You've been talking a lot about that. What is it like when you go to a college campus? What is ultimately the wisdom you want to share with students and audiences?
Well, I don't think I have a lot of wisdom to share, but I think the book has several chapters on my college experience, which was at Oberlin College, which is different from Vassar, but there are, I think, some similarities. It's small, it's, you know, progressive in a way, and although, of course, Oberlin is in Ohio and Vassar is in the beautiful Hudson Valley. But I think, for the most part, you know, the book is about one's journey as a young person, and I think that really resonates nicely in college campuses, where people are in that kind of transition from living with one's parents to finding a path in a way away from them. And I think that that's what the book is about, the expectations I had as a child growing up and the kind of person that I became.
When you speak on a college campus, when you come into Vassar, will it be different than it would be if you were to speak at a bookstore in Boston or in St. Louis?
Well, not too different, but, you know, the questions are always very good at college campuses. I think there's always a very nice mix of people from the town and people from the college. I love these little towns very much. I live near Bard College half the year, which is not far from Vassar. So right. I think it's very stimulating to have a really nice college town.
What led you to a memoir? After three acclaimed novels, what brought you to memoir?
Well, I'm 41 already, and, you know, in Russian years, that's 74 or something. So I feel old. And, you know, when you're this age, you're far enough from childhood to have more of a, you know, more of a critical appraisal of it and not as an emotional appraisal. And at the same time, you can still remember things, you know. So I think middle age is actually a nice place to look back on.
When you think of that, because the book really does travel through your life, but obviously focuses an awful lot on your childhood, an awful lot on Russia and that experience and what it was like and how it continues to stay with you.
Well, I think, you know, in a weird way, I remember Russia so well, even though I left when I was 7 years old. Everything was so different and so gargantuan and monumental and propagandistic and just really overwhelming. And so when I was living there, I became I just fell in love with writing and reading at a very early age. And at age five, I wrote my first novel that my grandmother had commissioned, which was called Lenin and His Magical Goose. And it was about Lenin invading Finland and trying to start a socialist revolution there. And that was one of the sweetest experiences of my life. There was this woman who just loved me unconditionally, and she paid me in pieces of cheese for each page I wrote, and there was just a lot of sweetness there. So the book does have a lot of sort of, the motif is really being brought up in one superpower and then coming to another. So it's a very 20th century kind of story. It's landing in this country, and I think I describe it as landing in a pool of technicolor after living in the more monochromatic sort of Soviet gray era. It was just, there's nothing like it, and there will never be an experience like it, because I think immigrants still come, obviously, to this country, but the Soviet Union was so blocked off by the Iron Curtain that it really was like traveling from one planet to another and not just from one country to another.
And initially, you viewed America with disdain. There was concern about going there.
Yeah, well, you know, you're brought up for 7 years to believe that America's the enemy, and all of a sudden your father tells you, no, we are the enemy in a way, and you know, you have to completely readjust your idea of things, which is interesting because, you know, I was such a fervent believer as a child. I just wanted to believe so much in the Soviet Union. I wanted to be a Red Army soldier or a cosmonaut, you know, when I was growing up. And all of a sudden you're told, okay, it's time to stop worshiping Lenin, and now you have to worship Ronald Reagan instead. It's just a very big change.
The title Little Failure comes from a name that your mother called you, which is a fusing of Russian and American, and it would seem to me that would say a lot about your relationship.
Well, you know, I think people have a different kind of upbringing, and I think a lot of immigrant families raise their children quite differently. By American standards, you certainly wouldn't do things like that. You know, you're not supposed to encourage your child by belittling them, but I think in many you know, societies, this is what you do. You want your child to succeed, so you call them things like little failure. And that nickname came about because after I graduated from Oberlin, I had decided not to go to law school, which was, of course, the dream my parents had for me, and decided to become a writer. And I was, of course, living quite poorly at the time, and so my mother coined that term, I think, to encourage me to do better.
When did writing start to come on your radar as something that you excelled at and more importantly, that you enjoyed?
I think, as I said, you know, when I was 5 years old is when I wrote my first book. I knew from the start that this is something I wanted to do. I just loved words. And just walking around Leningrad in the 1970s was just filled with, you know, there were all these slogans everywhere and written in gigantic metal letters and chain, you know, nailed into marble. It was, I knew from the start that words were something that I loved and wanted to do. Also, the other thing is I really was never good at anything else. You know, after I graduated from Oberlin, I worked in a bunch of, you know, I worked as a paralegal and as other, you know, in nonprofit offices. And boy, I really am not good at anything else.
When did you come to the realization that you were good at this, that it was something that you were able to handle?
Well, I went to this Hebrew school in Queens, and it was not an easy experience. This was the 1980s, the time of all those, you know, Cold War speeches by Reagan about the evil empire, and
right,
all those movies like Red Dawn and Red Gerbil, Red Hamster, everything was red, you know, and the kids really, there was a lot of animosity toward me because I think the kids perceived me as a communist or a Russian, even though all we wanted to do at that point was to assimilate in America. So I started writing. I had a terrible accent, but I could write. You know, when you write, there's no accent. So I would write all these science fiction books as a kid. And there was one very nice teacher, an English teacher, a substitute teacher, who had me. She really loved what I was writing as a, you know, 11, 12-year-old. And she had me read these books, and they were really very long. And she had me read them out to the class. And the students, the kids really loved them. And that was sort of my integration into America, was really learning how to write. And so I became, instead of, you know, the hated Russian, I became, you know, the moderately tolerated eccentric. And that was a huge step up for me.
When you started this project and writing Little Failure, did you know ultimately what direction you wanted to go in the sense of exploring all aspects of your life? Or was there one, an artistic aspect? Was there one thing that you wanted to really center on?
Well, what I wanted to find out was, how does one generation sort of trickle down into the next and into the next and into the next? So the book became a kind of almost historical project. I researched it quite a bit. I went back with my parents to Russia. I go back all the time, but they rarely go back, so I took them back there. And I don't want to give away too much of what happens at the end, but I did learn a lot of family secrets and a lot of things that were always on my mind in a way, but that I've never really learned to address. So the book really is about how it's about families in a big way, you know, how children are brought up and what their expectations are. And what makes it interesting in my mind is just this incredible journey that was undertaken. You know, my grandparents grew up mostly in little villages throughout Russia. Then they made the journey to Leningrad, to St. Petersburg now, and then my parents picked up and moved us to New York. So the journey from the village to New York over the course of, you know, almost a century is to me very instructive in how people adapt to very different circumstances.
As you noted, you don't want to give anything away, but I was taken by the fact that it certainly puts an awful lot, at least for us and a reader and a fan of your work, it puts a lot of it into a context, which I'm sure it did for you as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It really, you know, I started out not knowing enough about my family, I think is the case that, you know, in my 20s and 30s, I think I did harbor a certain amount of anger at my parents. I couldn't understand why they would act the way they did. You know, it didn't comport with the American part of me that expected a much different, more progressive, more laissez-faire kind of upbringing. And in writing this book, what I felt was absolutely no anger toward them, but more kind of sorrow that they did grow up where they did and where their opportunities were so limited. My feelings about family certainly changed in writing this book.
You write a lot about love as well.
Yeah. Well, I think families and romantic love are two of the main topics that all literature deals with, fiction or nonfiction, I think, in the end.
We spoke a moment ago about the questions that you get from the audience, and I would assume you're getting a lot of questions now about Russia, about the situation, and is that something that you are comfortable discussing, not because of the nature, but just because of the fluidity and not really completely aware of what's you know going to happen?
Well, the thing to remember about Russia is that nothing good really ever does happen. You know, it's always a disaster, one way or another, and the government is always doing things that don't reflect the best needs of the population. Who needs this war? Russia can barely take care of itself, and it wants more territory. This is just—it makes no sense. But there's always this imperialistic tendency, this belief that you know that the West is corrupt in some ways and soulless, and that Russia needs to step in as the great moral power, but it never is the great moral power, and it always does things that are a detriment to the world. So that's the real issue here, and I think, you know, wasting $50 billion on the Olympics and now this, it's just this never-ending search for prestige almost and attention. You know, I think Russia always needs to feel that it has an important place in the world and it can't abide by any other thing. I was in a taxi cab in Moscow a year ago, and there was a taxi driver, and he was crying to me about how he can barely feed his own family. He wants to move to America. And I said, you know, Canada also accepts a lot of immigrants, and they have a great economy. And he spit on the floor, and he said, no, I can only live in a superpower. You know, and I think that kind of mentality just keeps persisting.
I was actually reading this book during the Olympics, and I was wondering how you viewed the 3 weeks of athleticism in your home country.
Well, this year I'm celebrating my 41st year of not caring about the Winter Olympics, so you know, it really didn't register at all. I don't know. It's over is all I can say, and in a way now Russia is showing its real face in terms of what it's doing in the Crimea.
This is the Russia that you know, of what
we're
seeing now.
This is the Russia that I know. Yeah. Yeah.
The title of the book is Little Failure, a Memoir. It is published by Random House. Gary Steingart will present the Krieger Memorial Lecture on March 27th at 8 o'clock at Vassar College. And you can find out more information by going to our website. There's a link there. It's wamc.org/roundtable. Gary, thank you so much for being with us. We look forward to seeing you in Poughkeepsie.
You.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Can't wait. Mm-hmm.
Thanks
Take
so
care.
Much. Again, the title of the book is Little Failure, a Memoir. Gary Steingart will be at Vassar College, presenting their Krieger Memorial Lecture on March 27th at 8 o'clock. More information on our website at wamc.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.